Final hour overdrive continues. TSN 1050 on the TSN app. Your home smart speaker up on TSN 2. Brian Hazio, Doug, Jeff O'Neill, Jamie Noodles, McLennan. We've got John Gibbons later this hour. Darren Dreger in just a moment. I'm seriously jealous of our friend Kara Waglin, who had her first career hole-in-one today.
You don't have one?
I do not have one. No, I do not have one.
Oh, dude, how many do you have?
I only have one. And Noodles, this is a scenario. Congrats, Kara. That's awesome.
Unreal.
Hole-in-one is unbelievable. You start thinking about it, like, after a while. Like, every time you get to a par three, you're like, ah, because it seems as the odds are so stacked against you to get one, it seems like everybody has one.
Mm-hmm.
It's like impossible, the odds of getting the, it's like winning the lottery. But everybody you talk to is like, ah, I got a hole-in-one.
Yeah, it's like a weird, I'll be honest, it's pure envy and jealousy. Like, I sent Kara a congratulatory text, but it was just seeping with disdain. I'm like, I'm so jealous that you have a hole-in-one. And I do that with everyone. Like, everyone has one, or seems like it, and then it's awesome, and you have to congratulate them because that's an amazing feat. But I'm just a loser without a hole-in-one. I mean, that's ultimately what it is.
Yeah, but you were one under in the front nine.
I do have that at the Pro-Am. I do have a spectacular nine at the Pro-Am at the RBC Canadian Open. That's true. That can't be taken away from me, Noodles. But, no, shout-out to Kara. That's amazing. So cool. And, So there, and late in the season too, right? Like, that's the thing. You got to sneak that in. That'll keep your juices flowing all the way through the winter. That's
let me
sure.
ask. I need to ask an etiquette question. Like, do you need to reach out to her and congratulate her? Like, I was texting with her today on other stuff. Like, I saw she got a hole in one. Do I need to be like, hey, congrats on
no,
the hole
you're
in
not
one?
A
I don't
golfer. Go. You don't care enough. You're not. You don't understand, Noodles. You got to have a passion for the sport. To understand, like the mean, like how cool it is, how big of a moment that I can tell you, and you can speak to it when you got yours. I guarantee you, Kara is on cloud nine. You know, like she's married, she's got two kids, like she's had great days in her life, which I'm sure are higher than this. But the hole in one day it's probably a top 10 day all time,
buddy.
Right?
When I saw James Duffy, like he's the one who notified me because mine was on an upper level green where you couldn't see the ball on the green. And he walked up and he just put his hands in the air. I ran around the green and yelled, like screamed at the top of my lungs because I was so jacked up. And it's funny because Brad Fay was two holes ahead of me and heard me. And he was like, man, you must have got a hole in one. I'd never heard anyone yell like that at the golf course. He just got his first hole in one on the same hole a month ago.
No way.
No way.
How That's about awesome. This? Brad Fay. Shout out to Brad Fay.
And, dude, he has one of the most bizarre stories you've ever heard in your life. On the same hole, him and his buddy were using the same golf ball. Can't see it because you can't see it land. One is 1 inch away from the hole and one's in the cup. And they had the same golf ball, I swear to God. And they couldn't figure out.
That can't be possible. There's got to be a scuff mark or something.
Wow.
They're playing the exact same ball.
Exact same ball. And that's how they still haven't really got to the bottom of it, I don't think. But the one ball had hit the cart path the hole prior. So I believe there might have been a scuff mark. But nobody was really certain from my understanding.
That's sickening, man. I don't
think that would be sickening. Because you might in the back of your head think, I actually have two holes.
Do you know how mad I would be if my buddy stuffed one in? I'd be like, go shank a ball once. Like, duff it or something. Like, that's my hole in one and you ruined it for me. Or maybe I ruined it for you. I guess we'll never know. You guys want to hear Michael Kay? The obnoxious Michael Kay on Yes Network last night after the Yankees clinched the AL East, obviously winning that game last night. Here is Michael Kay and his call of that play.
You know what? It's really nice of Vlad Guerrero to let the Yankees celebrate in his house. Congratulations to the Yanks.
Like, you would think the Yankees have never made the playoffs before. Like, it's an organization. They're so arrogant. They're so cocky. you know, 27 World Series, blah, blah, blah. You won the AL East. You haven't, like, good. It's an accomplishment. They had a great season. And I know Kay is catering to his crowd in New York.
Yeah, it's still petty, though. Like, not a lot. I don't think a lot of guys in the league would do that.
I think the fact that it was Vladdy, too, it's like, really? You're going to, you know, of course Vladdy says it's his house. You know what I mean? You don't think Garrett Cole says that about Yankee Stadium or Judge or Stanton or whatever? And it's like, that's, you just won the AL East. You know, like, why take a run at someone else when really it should just be about your moment? That means Vladdy's in their head. And I want to see what's up with Garrett Cole tonight. And I'll bet you Audi's signs will be all over that park tonight. As they should be. As they should be. Here's Darren Dreger, a TSN Hockey Insider. What's up, Dregs?
I was just listening to you guys talk baseball, and, you know, I think to some degree we're all Judge fans because you're, you know, you're counting down. We're waiting for 61. And, you know, I've watched Aaron Judge play enough with the Yankees. I know that he's 6'7", but when he stands in that group with Matthews and Marner and whoever else is there.
Bunting.
Towers over those guys. Like, you remember seeing the pictures of Aaron Judge holding the water bottle in his hand? And it looked like he was holding, like, a mini bottle. And I thought, well, come on. Like, he's not that big. Ginormous. Like, I could not believe.
Massive.
Now it puts it in perspective why he swipes at the ball and, you know, sends him sailing. He hasn't done it in a while. But anyway, that was a good aside to see the group assemble yesterday and get to meet some of the other idols of sport around the world.
Dregs, we had a spirited debate about the goal song for the Leafs and goal songs in general. You grew up in Saskatchewan. You grew up with the Oregon. Hayes is advocating for an Oregon, I guess, reemergence. Would you be in front and center for that?
Yeah, I listened to that segment.
You don't sound impressed.
No, I'm okay with it because it's old school.
Come on, Dregs. No one likes it nowadays.
I know. I get it. To finish my thought, I think if, you know, past goal five, it would get old immediately and you'd be, all right, we're done with this. But I vividly recall, Noodles, going back to your era, the only Western Hockey League song that I recall is going into the Lethbridge Hurricanes barn. And it was, of course, you know, rock me like a hurricane. Like, and they played that how many times over the course of a year? But that was also in the late 80s, early 90s. So the game and that sort of technology has evolved a little bit. So I'd be okay for a few games, but
you're probably right. Over the course of a full season, it might get a little bit old. And technology affords us, you know, the ability to play basically anything you want. But
how about the milestone goals, though, Brian?
There you go.
Like, when he hits 50, like, whoever's on the Oregon at Scotiabank's got to be ready. And assuming that he scores 50 on home ice, I don't know. But
I agree with you. Well, it's interesting. Like, once you get to the 60-goal plateau. Is that the mark we're waiting for, Dregs? Or is it always going to be 50? Like, if he scores 50, that's the monumental, like, goal.
Yeah.
Or is it 60?
It is for me. No, 50 is the milestone for me.
Okay.
Only because, and Brian, we know nothing about what it takes to score that number of goals at any level of hockey.
Yeah, right. I know that one.
Yeah. We've been reminded of that how many times now, you and I?
Yeah,
50 is just, that's, do it back-to-back 50 plus, and I think you aim for 50 and see what happens after that.
Dregs, what do you think the plan is for Leafs Nation here with Johnny T out of the picture? Is it Nylander going into the middle, or what do you think, how is that lineup going to shake out in his absence?
Yeah, it sounds like that's the plan initially here. But a lot can change, as we know, still relatively early in the process of the preseason and all of that. There's been a love around the organization for Willie Nylander right now, and not just based on what we saw, you know, the other night in gameplay and how hard he trained, but, you know, the fact that he seems to have come with a bit more swagger, not cockiness. Don't get me wrong. I mean, Willie's had a tremendous amount of cockiness at varying points and is still relatively young NHL career, but there is a sense that he knows that he has to turn a corner, or at least feels like he's got a lot more to give, right? So, you know, I think they start him at center and see how he does and see whether or not he can drag a line. Maybe he can be the driver, like Mike Babcock used to talk about for the years that he spent in Toronto. And I think there's a willingness to consider that. But there were big questions around who would flank, you know, Tavares and Nylander, who's going to play on the other wing, and what was that going to look like. So now that Tavares is out for 3 weeks with a strain, you know, this just adds a little bit more intrigue. But it at least initially sounds to look at Nylander there.
I think you just get to a point, Dregs, and the way I've always explained it is you become a young kid and everything's great. You're getting paid and you got fancy clothes and a car. But I think when you get some skin in the game and you got to answer some questions when you don't win, why didn't it happen? I think it makes you a little bit grumpy, and I think that's a positive thing. Like, you get to 25, 26, maybe you're just not popping up and so happy-go-lucky, and you got a bit of an edge to you. And I think if all of them have just a little bit more of that, it could be a difference maker.
Yeah, I'm with you. And I think particularly in this market, well, in a Canadian market, you know, I spent time a couple of Mondays ago with Blake Wheeler, as you guys know, and he openly talked about losing his captaincy. But it seemed, unless he was just selling me a bill of goods, that he was okay with it. Well, why is he okay with it? He's okay with it because he's a 36-year-old hockey player who's played at a high level for a long, long time, knows what it feels to wear the burden of a captaincy in a Canadian market. Well, you don't have to be a captain to feel that same level or at least a good amount of pressure playing. William Nylander has been, you know, really good, and then he has been not a problem child, but a beacon for negativity in this market. And maybe he's reached a point of maturity where he's like, all right, well, I'm going to try not to read it. I'm certainly not going to focus on it, but I better damn well be ready to do everything that I need to do to change whatever narrative there is and maybe show a side of me that is consistent, that is a superstar player potentially anyway. And maybe that takes some time, but I feel like in a market as strong as Toronto, the maturity of some players maybe takes a little bit longer because of all of the eyes and the scrutiny.
With Darren Dreger, TSN Hockey Insider, how does that apply to Sheldon Keefe, who's now been on the job for a few years, but is still a relatively young NHL coach, yet he's been through the ringer, and all he knows is the biggest market in hockey. And a lot of people disappointed with the way things have finished. I think he tripped himself up with the respect and the handshake line. I think he'd like that one back. But in terms of the way he approaches things and maybe O's word of being a little bit grumpy, do you expect to see that out of Keefe? Would that be in his best interest to do so?
Well, only if he gets the appropriate response. And that's not media response. That's not fan base. That's obviously response from the group and how they respond on the ice. You know, if you reflect back to, you know, him stopping the skate a couple of times and barking that he needs more physicality. I mean, he's talking about compete, right? Like, that's what he needed. And to get to that point, I mean, he must have seen, or more appropriately, wasn't seeing enough of that level of compete to that point in camp where he had the snarl. And he knows that the cameras are there and the microphones are there and the media is watching and all of that. But I don't believe that Sheldon does anything for effect. I feel like he's comfortable enough in his skin now, and the experience that he has, which isn't a great deal as a head coach in the National Hockey League. But if he's going down, he's going to go down swinging. And that's only because there's been colossal failure this year. No one expects that. It's a good team. I think he's a good coach. I think Kyle Dubas is a good manager. But if this does not go the way that Dubas hopes, that Sheldon Keefe and company believe and the players are invested in, well, there's going to be change. And as much pressure as there is on Dubas, because he's in the final year of his contract, you know, because Sheldon Keefe has another year after the one coming here, that's not a cloak of protection or insurance. So I don't think he's going to coach differently. but maybe he just feels like he's got to deliver the message a bit more strongly when he feels like it needs to be delivered.
Do you get any sense that Sandin and, you know, is closer or anything like that? I know everyone's, it's kind of a cone of silence around there, the Leafs don't.
Yeah.
But I mean, you know, just common sense. I mean, maybe I'm wrong. We've been talking about it for days. Like, there's not a better path for Rasmus Sandin to be an everyday player than right now. And I just, I don't get the sense that, I don't know how much money's being potentially left on the table or offered, so I can't really speak with any level of education about it, but I don't think they're $3 million apart. Like, it just, it's something is off. It doesn't smell right for me. Maybe I'm wrong with this, Dregs.
Yeah, and look, you know there's constant dialogue. I mean, that's kind of the push away, right? Obviously, the agent, Louis Gross, is doing his job. Kyle Dubas is doing his job. They're going to continue to grind away at it. And I'm not being critical of Louis Gross here. His job is to get his client, you know, the most security he can get him. But at some point, the player has to take control of a process, doesn't he? You guys probably had to do that in your career, where you go, look, I don't love the fact that they're offering what they're offering. I'd like a little bit more security in term and in money, but I'm blowing it here because I'm not in camp, and I'm not going to take advantage of some of the opportunity that I would have given the circumstance of the Toronto Maple Leafs. Well, look, I don't know Rasmus Sandin at all. This is not a character judgment or an assassination. He's missing it for me. He's missing it for me. Like, you have to read the salary cap, and you have to look at everything that goes into, especially a cap-strapped team like the Maple Leafs. Yeah, we know they've got injuries, and maybe they're going to have a little bit more flexibility. But, you know,
Darren, you know more than anybody, bud, that the player and the agent says, the cap problems aren't my problem. I didn't do that. And I, you know what it's like. Regardless of the team situation, the player's always going to say, your cap problems aren't my problem. I deserve this, so why aren't I getting it? That's the way they always say it. Whether you're right or wrong, there is no right or wrong, but that's what the player always says.
100%. I get it, though, but he hasn't done enough at the NHL level to take that stand. He may believe.
Exactly.
He obviously believes that he has. He hasn't. Look at Mark Giordano playing for what he's playing for. And who doesn't think that Mark Giordano is going to have a really strong year this year in every respect? You know, we know the character and leadership that he's going to provide. I'm not so sure that he's not going to be a big point getter for the Toronto Maple Leafs this year. That's what I believe in. Sandin's not in a position where, well, he is. I mean, he's, you know what? He believes that he is. His agent believes that he is. The Toronto Maple Leafs just don't believe that that's the case. So we'll see 5 years from now how it works out for him. But to get back to where this conversation started specific to him, I believe this is a miss. I think it's a missed opportunity for him.
Yep. Well, we're well into camp now, and nothing's changed. And I'm not sure why we should expect it to change tonight, tomorrow. I mean, we'll see how it plays out. We'll leave it there, Dregs. Thanks for doing this, buddy. We'll do it again soon.
All right, guys. Have a good one.
Darren Dreger, TSN Hockey Insider. Leafs Canadians tonight. And the 72 Canadian team will be commemorated this evening. There'll be some of the greats in the building. They're doing a pregame ceremony for them. 50 years. And there'll be a lot of kids in there tonight. Like, every generation that gets further and further away from 72 probably loses a little bit of the history and the importance and the significance of that event. So it'd be cool for a preseason game to have a ceremony like this tonight.
Yeah.
The last time we saw something like this.
Beautiful line by Paul Henderson, Hazy B. I read a piece, Paul Hunter, and he said Paul Henderson woke up and was having his tea, and he was so nervous there was white caps in the cup of tea.
Wow.
Ooh.
What a line.
What a line.
What a line. Well, it worked out. Those nerves, man, they were directed in the right position, right? I mean, that goal, obviously the most famous goal in Canadian hockey history, Canadian sports history for that moment, so, or for that matter. And they will be on the ice tonight, and that'll be a cool vibe down there tonight, Leafs Habs.
You guys see this thing that's out? where they have rated the ugliest to best-looking coaches in the NHL?
I saw one of them that
How did Peter Laviolette get the ugliest coach?
I couldn't figure out the algorithms and like what website did this.
What dirtbag is going on there saying, yep, Lavi's the ugliest? Like, I know Lavi. He's probably pissed. Like, he's like, how am I the ugliest of all these goons?
Okay,
that would hurt.
The Calgary Flames, I think, play tonight. Don't they? If somebody in the scrum says to Daryl Sutter, you were ranked the second handsomest coach in the National Hockey League. What do you think?
I think his head will pop. He was miserable today. I watched him today. He was so miserable. If someone asked him that, I think he gets up and walks out. But I'm just wondering how they're accumulating these scores.
I don't know. Yeah, like Bruce Boudreau is number 16, and he had a great line about it. And, you know, like if Gabby's number 16, I don't know. I can't figure out the algorithm.
I think Dallas Eakins should have been up there. He's a pretty handsome guy.
Yeah,
Dallas
Eakins. Good looking guy. Sheldon Keefe's a young guy anyway. You know, I mean, there's, you're right. Lavi was last. I think Jimmy Montgomery was second last.
Jimmy? Jimmy's a good looking
too. I think
good
he's
guy,
a good looking
too.
Guy.
I want to know where. You know, who did that, first and foremost? And second,
you have
what
the
was
list,
their
Hayes?
Criteria? What was the criteria?
I had it. Let me find it.
Either take a break or let's come back and go through the list.
All right, we'll try to go through it before John Gibbons joins us because maybe Gibby have a take on it. Yeah, I have the list. We'll come back. We'll break it down a little bit, okay? Not extensive analysis on this. And John Gibbons coming up. Jays Yankees tonight. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on the TSN app. All right, John Gibbons here in just a moment. I'll ask John how, you know, I think he'd be flattered if there was some sort of list that came out, the most handsome managers during his time. I'll bet you he'd be flattered by that. If he was high on the list, he'd probably be pissed.
No kidding. What do you think Lavi's feeling right now? Lavi's pissed.
Yeah. So, again, I don't know if there was a vote. I have no idea how this came about, but the 32 coaches in the league were ranked most handsome to least handsome. And yeah, Peter Laviolette was 32nd. He's got his hair going. Like, he's got a flow down there. You know, like, yeah. So, he was 32. Jim Montgomery, 31. That's gutless. He's a new coach at Boston.
Jimmy's a good-looking guy. He is.
He is.
That's garbage.
I agree with you.
I thought it was funny that Jay Woodcroft was number one. Like,
yeah.
I know Jay, but you would
look.
Think.
Jay's a great dude. He's not Brad Pitt, okay?
John Cooper should be up there. He's a handsome guy. He's a winner.
John Cooper's a good-looking guy. Paul Maurice is kind of a good-looking older dude.
You know what? Next time we have Peter DeBoer on, we have to ask him about
where did Pete rank?
He was tied for 20. Marty St. Louis is a good-looking guy too.
Yeah. Luke Richardson's like 6'5".
I know, handsome.
Where's he?
I don't know.
Luke Richardson, 18th.
18th.
And what about Jared Bednar? That guy's style.
Oh,
and
he's number one. Man, he's the best-looking guy in the league.
He's 15th.
Yeah, like it's a weird list, man. Cooper's 27th.
Yeah, John Cooper should be like second or third, if not number one.
This has got to be an example of them just screwing with people and seeing if idiots like us will talk about it and take it seriously. Right? I think we're being duped, like, right now. I'll bet you there's people that put this together. Like,
some guy in his basement said, I'm gonna fire this up and see if these donkeys on Overdrive are gonna bring it up. We are.
We are.
Hook, line, and sinker. We are talking about a guy that lives in his basement that made a list of the best looking coaches in the NHL.
Right.
I just want to know the criteria. Because some guys have good salads, some guys don't. Like,
there is no
smile,
criteria.
Like,
there is no criteria. Lindy Ruff, our boy Lindy's at 17. That's blasphemy, as far as I'm concerned.
I would say
he's
that
an older cougar-looking guy. Like, he is.
He has a
Peter
mustache.
Laviolette is better looking than Lindy Ruff.
Well, anyway. yeah,
with that old school cookie duster he's got cooking there.
Yeah.
Mustache brings you right down to the bottom of the list.
I think Derek Lalonde at 3 is outrageous as well. He's a rookie coach.
and he's got some.
Who is that? I've never even heard of
that guy. That's
the
bald guy from Tampa.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that guy, yeah.
He's
at number 3?
He's
got a little Uncle Fester look, too. Like,
dude,
he's not
Brad Pitt either.
But he's a very good coach.
Lavi's better looking than him.
Yeah.
I mean, Lalonde could be a top 10, but three. Like, John Cooper's 27th. Derek Lalonde is third.
Right. That's what I'm saying. Everyone knows what's going on here. This was
Lalonde is the bald guy from Sex and the City. He's not at the top of the list.
Yeah, but he ends up with Charlotte in that show. I mean,
that's true.
That's pretty good. You know, like, yeah. I mean, he did a pretty good job in that show. But anyway, look at us. We're talking
stacked
Sex and the City. We're talking about coaches. This is exactly what I'm sure people would
expect. Give me one more shocking rating.
I don't know if I really have one. Like, how about Rod Brind'Amour, who, like, Rod the Bot, he's still in incredible shape. He's a 10. He's T10. Who else do we have in here that we know and we appreciate? John Hines is 4. Hines.
I think that's a bit rich. That's a bit rich. Like,
part of the competition, if all those guys were in line, mm-hmm. like lined up, and Rod Brind'Amour was standing beside Brucey Boudreaux, and they said, "Take your shirts off," Brucey would pass out.
Well, it would be like that Chippendale skit with us.
Yes.
With Farley and Patrick Swayze.
Yeah, that's what it would be like. Rod Brind'Amour and Brucey. Play the Joey Votto laugh.
Play the Joey Votto laugh. That's what we need.
Jesus.
That's a drop for us.
Honestly, anyway. Can you imagine?
John Gibbons will join us here in a moment. That is something I think would be great for charity. I think a lot of people would pay money to see that. But, all right, John Gibbons, do we have Gibby on the line? I don't know if we have him. We're calling him up. But
we don't even have lines.
I don't think we do. Yeah. We may not be on the air anymore. It wouldn't be surprising after the breakdown we just had.
I think Gibby would fall somewhere. He could make a top 10. I haven't seen every manager in the league.
No one had a better strut than John Gibbons.
That's true.
His walk out to the mound was some of the best entertainment. When you're like, here he goes. Gibby's making his way out. And, you know, it would take him a while, but once he got out there, man, he'd get that job done. And here he is, the longtime manager of the Blue Jays and host of the Gibby Show. You can find it wherever you download your podcast. Here's our good friend John Gibbons. How you doing, John?
All right, man. So you like that walk? I called it a waddle.
Yes.
Gibby, what kind of vibe were you trying to send? Were you trying to say, like, was it obviously different for every scenario that you were going out there? Like, if you were pissed at a guy, what kind of walk or what kind of vibe would you want to have?
Well, to begin with, I call it bad genetics, man. I blame my mom and dad, you know, for that bad walk. But, no, you know what? I tell you what, there's times I can remember coming out of the dugout, you know, when you signal to the bullpen, let's say, right? And I'm a little more, putting a little more oomph in it when I'm pissed off, you know?
That's the way it should be. Then,
yeah, exactly. Yeah, because you can't go out to the mound and grab them around the neck, you know? They won't allow that, you know? But I guess you gotta control yourself sometimes.
That's right. Well, John Schneider was trying to contain himself last night. I mean, the fundamentals of this Blue Jay team been on display, and it's been ugly. And last night, Vladdy, you know, he thought he hit one out. He didn't. He realized it wasn't out of the park, and he tried to, you know, basically stretch a single into a double, and it ended the inning, and it was bad news. And Schneider called him out publicly after the game for it. How often would you play that card, calling out a superstar on your team when everyone on earth knows the guy clearly made a mistake?
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, you know what? You got to go after the big dog. You know, I mean, you know, it's easy to go after the little guy, right? You know, but it sends a good message when you go after the top guy, because they're no different. I mean, they're better players, obviously, than, I mean, they're the star players on your team. But, you know, if you treat those guys the same way as you do the 25th, 26th man on the roster, you know, it goes a long way with those other guys. But, you know, but last night I saw some of that game. Last night, well, you know, obviously wasn't a good one. But that hasn't been the case, has it? I mean, they just came off a good series down there in Tampa, and they won that close ball game. So, yeah, but I got to tell you the truth. You know, in baseball where you play every stinking day, you know, and it's never excused. But some days you have them crappy games, you know. And, you know, I guarantee that ball that fell in, you know what? I mean, that's not Bo's ball. It's one of the outfielders. You know, they got to call him off, two veteran outfielders. And then, you know, the ball that Bo threw high to first base, Yeah, I mean, you know, he normally makes that play, you know, but I guarantee he wasn't trying to. He wasn't dogging or anything like that. But, you know, the effort things, now if it becomes a pattern where, you know, 2-3 games or something that they play like that, okay, it's one thing. But other than that, sometimes, you know, that just happens in baseball. They were on a long road trip, the intensity level. Some days, you know what, in reality, some days you just stink, you know. And when you play the game every single day, you know, that's what happened. And I heard some of Buck's comments after, and some other guys, some guys that played and stuff. And I'm thinking, how quickly some of these guys forget, you know what I mean? And I don't mean that, you know, I'm not protecting anybody that, you know, dogs it or anything like that. But I'm just saying, sometimes you stink, you know. But you got to keep perspective. This is the top wild card team in the American League. They're doing something right, you know.
Mm-hmm. How do you find that balance, Gibby? I think if you look at the heyday for the Red Sox, I mean, they were deemed the idiots. Like, that was their nickname. But I think when it came to playing baseball, they were old school and they were hardcore and they all talked about baseball. Anyone around that Red Sox team said they'd get to the ballpark. It was talking baseball, eat, sleep, drink baseball. They might have been idiots away from the baseball field, but how do you find that balance, or does that have to come within the premier players of the team?
You mean as far as balance, you know, effort-wise or something?
Just having fun, because they're in the dugout and they always seem like they're having fun, but if they want to get to that next level, they got to have some level of seriousness when they go out there.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, the thing is, yeah, that was a fun-loving bunch right there. But there was also some intensity about it. But they had a bunch of screwballs. But once that game started, you know, they were competing. And I spent a couple months with the 86 Mets, who were known as a bunch of, you know, I've never seen anything like this group. And they fought each other, not the other team. Well, they all followed the other teams too. But you know, they weren't malcontents, but they were, you know, there was a lot of friction in there between some guys. But once that game started, you know what? They were pulling for each other, and they played to win. And that's what those Red Sox were. But you got to tell you know what? I mean, to be successful in baseball, you better be able to relax. If you can't, you're tense all the time. You know, it's hard to play that game. And I can remember, I don't know if it's factual, but do you remember that a year they came back on the Yankees? They were down 3-0, remember?
Yeah.
Three games to love.
0-4.
The story I heard or I saw, or somebody was talking, giving an interview, they all took a shot before the game, right? They're down 3 games. Now, let's see, what do we got to lose? You know, boom. They won that game. They're seeing everybody's taking a shot. And then they ran it out 4 straight, you know. So after that, I don't know if they were taking a shot every night or what, but, you know. So
you better be, man. If that works, I don't care what you got to do. Keg stands if you got to. I mean, something's got to give.
That's right. Whatever works, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, Gibby, speaking of taking shots, the Yankees wrap up the AL East title last night. Do you think if you end up winning it and some of the guys take it deep, is it almost like a guarantee that it'll be a stinker the next night for them?
For the Yanks tonight, you mean?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you know what happens? You know, and now they're all going to exhale, and I guarantee they lived it up pretty good last night. And you know, and when you got a veteran team, you rest those guys. Otherwise, they turn on you, man. They go, "Wait, come on, Skip. You know, we just gave you 100 and whatever games. We won it for you. How about a break?" You know, so yeah, I guarantee you, most of them won't be in there. It's a little bit different now, though, where the expanded rosters aren't what they used to be, right? Mm-hmm. They can only bring up a couple guys, so you don't have all those extras hanging around. Used to be all those extras were the guys that played today or tonight. Now it's different, so I'm sure you'll see, you know, some of the regulars in it. You know, Judge will be in there.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, I've heard that argument before, and the thing is, you can play those guys if you want, to celebrate all the night before, but I guarantee you it ain't going to be worth the crap anyway, so you're almost wasting your time there. So if you got an expanded roster, you're better off playing some of those young, hungry kids. Sorry.
Oh, yeah. They'll be rearing to go. Although, like, if they're 20 years old, man, they can hit the bars up here, as you know, Gibby. It's a little bit different in the States. So anything's possible with even the young guys with John Gibbons. Last night, you know, Jose Barrios, this whole season has really – it's been a disappointing one for him. He can't put it together. And I'm curious how you think John Schneider and Pete Walker are going to handle him once they get to the playoffs, because we all know they're going there. And they're going to be in the wild card. They'll play at least 2 games, maybe 3. But the organization is committed to him. They paid a hefty price to get him. They gave him a huge contract. And he's got a track record of being a stud pitcher. but it's been so ugly for them this year. Do you think they'll still send him out there in the biggest moments in the playoffs, or is there a chance Ross Stripling gets the ball instead of Jose Berríos?
Well, you know, I have no idea what they're going to do and how and what they're thinking. But outside of looking in, I haven't followed the team. You know, I followed it, but I haven't. You know, I'm not into it every day and all that. I don't see how there's any way you can't pitch Stripling if it comes to a third game. You know,
right?
You know, because you know it's all about winning. It's not about how big your contract is. You know, that goes out the door here. You know, the thing about Berríos. I thought it was Berríos. It's Berríos. I'm going to get that right. Anyway.
Yeah, you got a podcast now, man. You're a professional broadcaster, Gibby. You got to get that right.
Hey, I don't think anybody expects me to get it right. That's the problem, because I can mangle the English language with the best of them. But you know what? The thing about him is I thought he looked good the first couple innings last night. He seemed to be on the tack. He was making some pitches. And then, the thing about, you know, where you face a judge right now when he's going for the record, right? You're still trying to win the game, but you know you're not going to lay it in there here. I want to be, you know, this and that. So they pitched him tough, and you know he ended up walking. What did he walk four times?
Four times.
That's where you run into trouble when you get with these guys and you're pitching around him so tough. Next thing you know, he's on base, and that opens things up for the next guy. You know, that's where it can burn you sometimes. But also, you throw him over the plate as hot as he is, and the kind of year he's had, he's going to burn you that way. So that's the benefit of having him on your team. But as far as Berríos, you know, I thought it was almost his breaking balls looks a little big sometimes, you know, and it's tough with a command or be his pinpoint controlled. But he also threw some pretty damn good pitches, you know, and there were some calls he didn't get, but that's baseball, right? But he's like anybody else, you know. If you put it on too much over the middle of the plate at the wrong times, the wrong hitter, they're going to burn you. You know, the game really demands that these pitchers, you know, throw it on the corners. And now that they all throw so hard, you know, when these guys, you know, how many starters are out there? I mean, that I'm blowing gas now. And so when you throw that hard, it's that much tougher to have the pinpoint control. You know, they just don't go hand in hand. You know, usually you're guys that could dissect it pretty good are your finesse guys, right? You look back at your Maddox and some of the Glavins, some of those guys, just a couple names, Mark Burley, you know, but it's a different style. But you bring it up there in the high 90s, you know, damn, it's pretty tough to command that. But I think he's making too many mistakes, there's no doubt about it. And I thought, you know, he gets into trouble sometimes when his breaking ball gets too big. But that's my opinion. What do I know?
Gibby, going back to Berríos and Stripling, like Stripling possibly starting over Berríos, who is making that lineup card? Who is making the decision on that? Is that from up above, or is that Schneider that's going to decide?
Well, I guarantee this. You know what? Nowadays, I guarantee a heavy input's coming from the top. I mean, that's just a fact. I don't think that's any secret. I don't think
heavy input. Does that mean they're making the call? They're saying this guy's starting the game.
Oh yeah, I can guarantee you that's and you know what, if that is the case in the what I don't understand sometimes is now the front offices, there's no doubt they're in control of things. And if that's what you believe and that's okay, why not defend it? Don't come out and say, well, you know what, no, the manager's making the calls, because that's not true. You know, I mean, if you believe in it, it's right, why wouldn't you defend it? Say, of course we're doing that. You know, that's kind of the way the game is now. So, and you know, John's been, I'm sure he's got some input. No doubt. I mean, he's a good baseball man. He really is. But he's been in the managing for, you know, a half a season. So, I guarantee he's not making all the calls.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no way. Not just because of that, but that's part of it, but because, I mean, that's the way the game is now. So, there's usually, they get together and they discuss things. But from my understanding, most teams out there, maybe all of them, you know, they juggle the lineups in the front offices are pretty much, their analytics people are putting it together what against whoever they're facing that night on the mound, they're putting together the best lineup or the best batting order they can, you know. And there has been a lot of benefit from some of that, but you know, I think we've gotten carried away too. So, they'll all put their heads together. I definitely know that. But I will tell you this, you know, as a baseball fan the game's all about winning anyway, right? But when you get the postseason, there's no way you should ever. I don't care what a guy's making. If there's another guy that's making less than he is, and he's your better option to win, the hell with it, man. Why should that matter to me? So you look good? No. If that's your motive, you know what? You're approaching it the wrong way. But I don't think that'll happen.
Oh, I'm with you on that. Great stuff as always, John. We always appreciate you finding time for us. We'll do it again real soon.
All right, boys. My pleasure. Have a good one.
You got it. John Gibbons. That effectively says it. Like, Atkins and company will have, I think, the final vote on who's going. And I think just based on seeing everything, Stripling is the guy I would go with over Berríos. If it comes to that, it may not.
I don't agree with that philosophy. Why even have a skip? Why are you paying a guy to get a feel for the pulse of the team and understand what the players need and want? Why are you bothering paying him? You want to talk about robotic umps? Put a computer in the dugout. I don't agree with that at all. Why are you paying him? They're supposed to get a pulse on everything.
I'm with you, man. I'm with you. They're in the trenches.
Like, I agree. They get 100%. A feel for it. I agree 100%, but that's the way they're trending. You heard Gibby say the analytics people draw up exactly the, you know, what they want to unfold, how the numbers say, what the numbers suggest, all of that. But the skip has to have the feel. Who's going? Who's not feeling well? Who's tired? Like, that's the type of stuff. It's the feel. And those are intangibles. And I know analytics, the analytics group hate that word. But they're in every sport. Mm-hmm. Like, they are in every sport, including baseball, which is basically analytical driven. Mm-hmm. But
I'm almost 100% positive that Mike Babcock, when he was here, is saying, you guys can do this or that, but I'm filling out the lineup card.
It's still very different in other sports. There's no question about that. Hockey is different. I'm sure there's some moments over the course of a hockey season where it wouldn't surprise me if management overrides a coach's call. Not with every coach, but I would think like a back-to-back.
Yes.
You know, the coach may be old school and say, you know what, I'm putting the starter back out there. I would not be surprised if there were examples in the NHL today where the GM said, no, you're not. Like, you're not doing it. And in the end, there's a pecking order. And, you know, the GM generally, I would assume, wins that battle, you know. Do you want to keep your job?
There's stories of owners saying, I'm paying that guy X amount of dollars. He's not a healthy scratch tonight. Yeah. Or he's on the power play. We're paying him power play type of money. You find a spot for him on the power play.
Right.
And then all
there's
of a sudden,
the ultimate mic drop is forget management. Right. The owner comes in and goes, actually about that?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
That guy's happening. Playing. And guess what? He's playing.
Yeah. I mean,
that guy's playing.
Ultimately, there is a pecking order, but the owners, if it is, especially if it's like a singular owner, they have their fingers on everything.
Jamie, that are like tight with the coach. Like, the coach gets in there tight with the owner, because then they just backdoor the GM. They're like, can you tell this guy to leave me alone on this topic or whatever?
Politics. Politics, man. It's a smart play. It's politics. Yeah. All right, we'll come back with our best bets brought to you by FanDuel. Leafs Habs tonight right here on TSN Radio, and also obviously the Jays and Yankees down at the Dome. We'll tee both of those up next. All right, today's best bets brought to you by FanDuel. Bet on all your favorite teams in the FanDuel Sportsbook app. I love the Jays tonight. Love the Jays. The Yankees, like, I haven't seen anything online of where they were last night. Maybe they just went back to the hotel. Who knows? But you can find something on a Tuesday in Toronto. You'd find something.
Sure.
Boudreau. There used to be a place called Boudreau.
I'm not familiar with that spot. I don't remember Tuesday. Like, Tuesday is such a nothing night.
Yeah, it was always just the underground. You can go to the underground any night. Now it's not open. The new place is Radio, which is good. I went there one night.
Haven't heard that. Where? Is that where the old underground was?
No, it's right. You know where that bowling alley is by the theater?
Yeah.
The Scotia Bay, right above it.
Peter there.
Yeah, right on John and Peter and John. Yeah, right above it. It's unbelievable. Live band, everything.
Sweet. Yeah, man. The underground went under quick with COVID, right? It was like end of March 2020. They're like, we're done.
Bring it back for the people.
Yeah, come on. Bring it back for the people. So maybe for the Jays if they clinch themselves. So I'm on the Jays tonight with Mitch White on the mound. Feels like Judge, he's not leaving Toronto without a home run. Doesn't it feel like he's hitting one tonight? Paying plus 215, not the greatest odds, admittedly.
Rick White, submarine sandwiches.
Yeah,
take my word for it.
Hoagie right down the middle. And I like Philly big in Chicago. I'll take them even on the run line, paying a little bit of juice. But Aaron Nola on the mound tonight, I like Philly. Those are your best bets. Brought to you by FanDuel. Make every moment more. Get your winnings fast when you download the FanDuel Sportsbook app today. Matt Murray about to make his debut. You can hear it right here on TSN Radio. We'll see. It's only two periods. Doesn't matter if he plays great. Let's hope he plays great, right? Let's hope for the Leafs' sake and for his sake. Have a good, solid first impression and just get it out of the way with and go. The Matthews line not playing tonight. So, you know, there's NHL talent, clearly, but it's not going to be a loaded lineup, which is what you would expect with the preseason. But
yeah,
the 72 team will be commemorated this evening, so we look forward to that. And there's the lineup up on TSN, too, what we can expect tonight. So
Pontus Holmberg, getting a lot of love, that guy.
Yeah.
Interesting to see. I mean,
with
he's getting Benny a look.
Malgin.
He's playing with Jerry Malgin and Willie Nye, so, I mean, he will get some looks for sure.
Yeah, he certainly will. There's a line, too, Robertson, Kerfoot, and Yarncroke. So, yeah, we'll see. The Leafs in action, Jays in action, and should be some buzz downtown with both buildings full tonight, or relatively full this evening. So we look forward to that. Full breakdown tomorrow on the show. Appreciate everyone tuning in, everyone watching, listening, streaming, downloading. Don't forget to set your PVRs on TSN 4 and on TSN 2. There is a little organ to take us home. I love it. Thanks to everyone behind the scenes for helping out. We're out of here. Enjoy your evenings. Enjoy the games tonight. We're back tomorrow at...
Lavi, you're not ugly. 4 p.m.
We'll chat soon.